Is he my prince? Is he the toad? Waiting, wondering, is getting too old. I'm gonna let down my hair, slide up my skirt. Get me up, be the biggest little flirt. Well, I might have.
Welcome to the Shame Free Zone with Veronica Monet, your friendly former sex worker and certified sexologist. The Shame-Free Zone is a safe place for your questions and your secrets about all things sexual.
Hey, this is Veronica Monet. Welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. And I've got a very special show for you tonight. I'm really, really excited about this. We're going to be having a lot of participants. They're going to be telling us some very, very important personal stories. I want to start off by just introducing you to an organization called Fallen. Badges supporting fallen officers' families, or Fallen for short. And Fallen is a not-for-profit, which is... Basically, their mission is to provide support to fallen officers' family. And I didn't know this until today, but approximately every two days, an officer is killed in the line of duty here in the United States. So we're going to be talking about that tonight, and we're going to be actually hearing from people who are intimately involved with trying to support the families of officers. But, it's going to be very much about those personal stories, so I think you're going to enjoy the personal aspect of it, although it's obviously a very somber and serious topic. Joining me at this point, and we've got some callers that are probably going to be checking in with us later, but is Aaron Pedro de la Sol. He's the co-founder and vice president of Fallen. He's a graduate of San Diego State University and a martial arts instructor, and law enforcement officer for the city of Del Mar, Contra Costa County Sheriff's Office Sergeant, retired. Aaron, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone.
Hello, Veronica. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm very glad to have you here. Very, very glad to have you. Now, can we call you Officer De La Sol, or is there some other way that we can acknowledge your service as a police officer? How does that work once you're retired?
Well, in and around the business, people who you work with still, refer to you using your last title before retirement. Mine was sergeant, and I was a sergeant at the Contra Costa County Sheriff's Office. So I was a deputy and then was promoted, retired as a sergeant. So Sergeant Pedro De La Sol.
Okay. So if I call you Sergeant De La Sol sometime this evening, it'd be okay. I'd be in good form.
I think you'd be doing okay.
Okay. All right. Also joining us tonight is Susan Moody. And Susan's husband, Brad, worked for the Richmond Police Department in California, and he was killed in the line of duty about 4 years ago. Susan, I first of all, want to express my condolences, and thank you so much for having the courage to join us this evening.
Oh, thank you very much.
And where are you calling us from? Where are you located this evening?
Oh, I live in Dixon.
Oh, okay. So you're a Northern California resident as well.
Yes.
How long were you married to your husband, Brad?
We were together for 6 years and married for 4.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
So, and did you have children?
Yes. We have 2 kids. They're now 5 and almost 7.
So your youngest probably doesn't even remember his dad, or does he?
They're both girls. They were 1 and 3 when he was killed, so they both probably don't really remember him just through the memories that, the family and I share with him.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit of what it was like for you? First of all, before we actually talk about what it was like after losing Brad, I'm wondering if you could give our listeners just a little bit of an idea of what it's like to be married to somebody who is in such a dangerous job.
I met Brad when I was a dispatcher at the same department. So I worked with him for several years before we got married. So I kind of knew the background, and I would, be working with him, sending him to calls every day that were dangerous. And, of course, it was very nerve-wracking having to listen to the call go down and, in the dangerous area that he worked for. But I can say that once I left the department after we started having kids, it was a little bit more nerve-wracking because I wasn't in control. I wasn't there listening to what was happening, and it was more of, when I would call his phone and I didn't hear back from him, of course, I would think the worst, and it was just a constant everyday worry. Every time he left the house, wondering if he would come back, just was always in my head. But I couldn't let that take over my life. I just had to just be okay with the fact that he was going to come back every day. But it was definitely not easy.
I can only imagine that it must have been very stressful. And it sounds like you're pretty committed to law enforcement if you yourself have a background in it. What drew you to be in services in law enforcement?
Well, my dad and uncle were both police officers, and then my brother followed suit and became a police officer. So my brother kind of talked me into, trying to be a part of the law enforcement family. And I wasn't sure if it was for me, but, the minute that I sat down in front of the terminal, I knew that it was, I just loved the action and loved being a part of, helping people. And it was just fun. It was a really fun job.
I'm wondering, and I'm sure our listeners are wondering too, how you got the news that your husband was killed on the line of duty.
Well, that actually is something that everybody asks me, and I feel bad actually really saying it, because typically protocol it states that they have to send an officer and, somebody else with them to my house or to the house to let them know, because, they don't want the widow or the spouse or whatever it may be to worry. And if they have kids, they don't want them to, freak out with the kids there. And I get protocol. I get that. I understand it now more than ever. But I made kind of a pact with one of the dispatchers there that if something were to happen to Brad, that somebody call me, because I live 45 minutes from that city, and I just, I would have preferred to be called so I know right away, just in case if I could get to the hospital in time to, if it was serious, to at least say goodbye if I had that chance.
Yes.
If. And fortunately, in this situation, I didn't. He was instantly killed, so I didn't have the chance. But I can say that I arrived at the hospital right when he was showing up. So if he was able to survive for at least an hour later, I would have been able to say goodbye to him. So,
yeah.
I feel bad because the dispatcher that, called me was, in lines to be, written up for what she did. But I, after everything was said and done, sat down with the chief and explained to him, the reason that she called, and I hope that he could find it within himself to not write her up in this situation. And she ended up not getting in trouble. She did get talked to about it and, explain that that's not protocol and stuff, but they understood the situation and they didn't end up writing her up. So,
it all
turned out, for the best. I'm, sitting in the situation that I'm in right now, I was home by myself with my kids. We had just woken up. So I was in the situation that they didn't want to happen. But I kind of, like, fear just kind of took over, but I knew that I had to get my kids taken care of before I could focus on getting to Broad. And I did that. You know, I called my best friend, got my kids taken care of, and then I went to the hospital.
Yes. Well, what has it been like since his passing? What kind of obstacles have you encountered?
You know, it's been a roller coaster. The first days, months were really, really tough. I can say that I don't really remember a lot of the beginning months of everything. It's kind of a blur to me. I mean, I remember that day like it was yesterday. I remember every single detail of that day. But as far as everything else, it just is a complete blur. And the emotions just were up and down. I mean, there was times where I was really mad at Brad for leaving us. There were times that I was mad at some of the officers at the department for not saving him, which was stupid because, I mean, there was nothing they could do. You know, of course, I went through my sad, you know, my mad, my just everything. Like, I was in denial for a really long time, just telling myself that he was gone. Like, he was a SWAT and K-9 officer, so he went to schools a lot. So many nights I would just tell myself, no, he's just gone at school, he'll be back. And it just got me through the time that I needed to get through. But, you know, I mean, it was just a roller coaster of emotions back and forth. And one day it would be one emotion, and the next day it would be the next. So
it must have been very difficult for you, too, and you've got to take care of two small children throughout this.
It was. And I can remember thinking, even though he was at work a lot, I was, you know, home a lot with them, but the fact that he wasn't going to be here, I really thought to myself, I didn't know how to be a single parent. Like, I remember feeling like I didn't know how to do the daily things, even feeding them, you know, like that was even a struggle of getting up in the morning every day, being a mom. It was really,
I can totally imagine. I mean, yeah, I mean, usually when people are going through those stages of grief, which include shock and denial and rage and bargaining and all of that, to have to take care of two small children and help them understand it, it must have been really, really difficult for you.
Yeah, they didn't understand. I mean, it was really hard for them. I still think it's hard for them to really understand the idea of, you know, him not being here forever, you know, and I mean, it's just going to take them, I think, growing up and understanding where he went to really get it, you know. But that's just going to take time. But I did go to counseling for, you know, 2.5 years, and that helped out a lot. I had a really great counselor. She helped me through a lot of the really dark times. And, you know, I would just pick up the phone and tell her I needed something, and she was right there, you know. I mean, I really owe her a lot in my grieving process, because I don't know how I could have gotten through some of the dark times.
Well, I've been through traumatic things in my own life, and I can't imagine doing it without the support of a good therapist or coach. I think we all need help, especially at moments like these in our lives. Speaking of help, now, were you helped by the program of Fallen?
Fawn is actually new, and so when Brad was killed, it wasn't around. But there was an organization, not similar, but same idea, called COPS. And they basically, the acronym for COPS is Concerns of Police Survivors. So they basically take care of the surviving families and coworkers of the fallen officer. And, you know, they've helped me out a lot, and my kids get to go to functions that there's other kids that are going through the same thing with the loss of their parent, whether it's the mom or the dad, and it makes them feel normal. Whereas, you know, maybe in school, most of their friends have both a mom and a dad. So maybe in the back of their minds, they feel kind of not normal, you know? And so going to these COPS functions and being around other kids that are going through what they're going through definitely helps them, I think, and it makes them feel like they're not alone or they're not different from anybody else.
Absolutely. Susan, I'm sorry to interrupt, but we do have a caller. Caller, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. Please state your name.
Yes, my name's Marion Cramp.
Marion, where are you calling from?
Marianne.
Marianne. Oh, hi, Marianne. Sorry. Where are you calling from?
Hello. I'm calling from Burnsville, North Carolina.
From North Carolina. Well, thank you so much for joining us out here on the West Coast. It must be pretty late where you are.
It's about 12:20 in the morning.
I was going to say, it has to be. Do you have a story to share with us or a question for our guests? And hold that thought for just a quick second. I'm also going to, here we've got another caller, and I'm going to introduce them into the show too. Caller, welcome to the Shame-Free Zone. What's your name, please? Hello?
Jim Remick.
Hi there, Jim. I was expecting your call. And I can actually intro you, if you like. I know you're the CEO and founder of Fallen, and you also are a United States Navy disabled military veteran, entrepreneur of Contra Costa County, deputy sheriff sergeant, and trustee of the Contra Costa County Employees Retirement System. How am I doing?
You're doing well.
Okay. Jim, if you'll stand by for a minute, I was just in the middle of having a conversation with Miriam, who's calling us all the way from North Carolina. And I'm sorry, calling her Marion. It's Marianne. Marianne from North Carolina was just about to tell us a little bit about herself. Marianne, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So can you tell our listeners a little bit about your story and why you're calling tonight?
Well, the reason I'm calling is, just like Mr. Jim Remnant knows, I lost my brother, a correctional officer, in April of this year. His name was William Lee Wright.
Oh,
and
yes.
He was the only sibling I had.
I'm so sorry.
So I'm trying to get his story out there and also, you know, to tell a little about our story and what's going on with us. My brother was 31 years old. He was robust and healthy and full of life and dreams and all those things that a 31-year-old man is full of. He was to be married the 17th of August this year, and he would have turned 32 this coming Saturday, August 11th. So he was the light of our world. When he was born, I was the only child up to then. And when he was born, I was so overjoyed, as any 8-year-old little girl would be, except for one thing. I went to school and made birth announcements out for all my classmates. So my third grade teacher told me at the funeral and had brought me the birth announcements that he had never seen such a happier child, and that's what we had was a happy childhood. And, of course, with me being 8 years older than my brother, I left, got married, got my teaching degree and was a teacher for 15 years and had two little girls of my own who my brother loved. That was their knuckle. They came up with the name. He wasn't just their uncle. He was their knuckle. And I asked my oldest when she asked her why she came up with that name, and she said, well, you know an uncle is to protect you. And I said, yeah. She said, but Mama, your knuckles protect you, and you try let somebody try to hurt me. Knuckle is always on watch, so he protects us.
Mm.
He's my knuckle. So since his passing, they now call it Knuckles Watch.
Wow.
Knuckles watching them from heaven.
Wow.
And their ages are 11 and their ages are 11 and 7, so, you know, they're just kind of young still.
Oh, my God, that's very young. Very young.
Yeah. And
this is so fresh for you. I mean, this happened, you know, like 4 months ago.
Yeah, it happened. He fell from the ladder April 9th, and he was taken by the local ER and kept 24 hours for observation. He was released early afternoon the 10th, and we thought he's getting better. He suffered major complications the morning of the 11th, and he died in my parents' driveway, which was his home, too, because he hadn't got married at the time.
Yeah. Now, he was a corrections officer. Marianne,
yes,
your brother was a corrections officer, but you said he fell off the ladder. What are the circumstances of his death?
He had a head injury, and the head injury was what ultimately caused his death.
Okay. And I understand that he was supporting your parents at the time?
Yes, my parents are both disabled.
Okay.
My dad is a disabled Marine, and, of course, my mom is disabled, too, and he was helping both of them, as me and my husband, too, because we're both disabled.
Wow.
I taught for 15 years and then suffered complications with a health problem I had and had to take disability. And my husband's always been because he has, he's blind, legally blind. So William was our help, but now without William, you know, just being here,
right?
It's to have the comfort of him is devastating. But have the financial burden that we're facing, it's even more devastating.
Yeah.
Because the coroner ruled his death of natural causes.
Oh, wow.
So we're not allowed to receive, you know, monies that you would receive normally.
Uh-huh.
And I was determined, because of my children, to, you know, Knuckle was watching. Mommy had to do something.
Yeah.
And I got on the internet, and I found Fallon and Mr. Jim Remnick. And it has been an absolute blessing to us because it gives us a little ray of hope there at the end of the tunnel.
Thank you, Marianne. I'm actually going to ask Jim to tell us a little bit about how Fallon has been able to assist you and maybe a little bit about how Fallon assists other families that are in your situation. Jim, thanks so much for standing by. Again, for our listeners, Jim Remick, he's the CEO and founder of Fallon. And Jim, could you tell us a little bit about how Fallon was able to help Marianne Cramp and her family?
Well, you know, we Fallon kind of came to life when Aaron and another gentleman by the name of Brett Daniels and I kind of strategized a little bit to try to get back a little. So Fallon has been in existence now for, I guess we're coming up on about 3 months. We received our 501c3 status about 3 months ago. Our purpose and our intent is to provide money to families such as Susan's family and Mary Ann's family. But we're in the process of putting the organization together, and we're in a fundraising mode. But I came up with a method that I could at least reach out to each and every family in the country to assist them. And we developed a method of setting up a specific web page that is tailored for each individual officer in the country. So when Fallon gets a notification, we make that web page live, and it allows for very specific donations to that family to occur.
Oh, okay. So I'm already on your website right now, which is www.rfallon.org. So rfallon.org. Where would I go if I wanted to contribute to Susan Moody or Marianne Cramp's family?
Okay. Well, William Wright's page is up there. Brad and Susan's tragedy occurred 4 years ago. So Brad's not on there. Susan is is going to help the Fallen team out in helping people like Marianne and the unfortunate people that have to go through this this horrible tragedy in their lives in the future. So that, you know,
okay,
we're not able obviously to go
can't be retroactive, obviously. So where would somebody, so is it on the main page, ourfallen.org?
Well, I have to give you another, Aaron, were you about to say something?
Well, I can, and yes, you can go to ourfallen.org on the homepage as soon as you get there, and you'll see that there is a donate button to make a one-time donation. It will take all major credit cards. If you go down under your one-time donation, you'll see there's a monthly ongoing donation where you can support one officer, two officers, five officers, 10 officers. If you support one officer and you click on that button and you subscribe, then you can deduct $2.50 monthly. That's $25 a year to support one officer, and you can choose as many as you like. There's also
these are very reasonable contribution amounts here. You've got $2.50, $4.50, $6.50, $8.50, or you can get via Brass Shield for $20, Silver Shield for $50, and the Gold Shield for $100. So you're making this really accessible to everybody.
It's easy, and we're looking for people to join in and do something that they can afford, that's real, that makes sense, and everything adds up. So underneath of that, it says in memory of, and you can put down, you know, the person of your choice, and you can subscribe. But I think what Jim was getting to specifically about Marianne is that when you go to the first giving site that we set up, and I'll give you that that web address right now. It's www.firstgiving.com/fallen. You will see that there are three officers currently listed, and that's another way that Fallen helps to assist people. So you can choose which officer you want through firstgiving.com, and you can donate directly to that officer, and 100% of those proceeds will go to people like Mary and similar people in the future directly for that officer. So those are a couple of different ways.
Yeah, I'm looking at I see it right here. There are three different officers, including William Wright, at the bottom of the page, and this, once again, is firstgiving.com/fallen. So if anybody is hearing Marianne Cramp's story tonight and wants to contribute to William Wright's fund, go to firstgiving.com/fallen. Aaron, while you're speaking to us right now, I wonder if you want to tell us a little bit about how you got involved in this and why.
Sure. Well, last year I was in a leadership group that my department had sent me to, and it was a Sherman Block leadership class. It was an 8-month-long class with sergeants and lieutenants from all over California, and it's a very prestigious class. And in that class, I was the treasurer and class lead, if you will, as far as getting group activities done and organizing the class. And this is just amongst the class members. It had nothing to do with organizing anything for SLI. But I was the treasurer, and when we gave donations every month to for the class and for the end of the class graduation. But there was money left over, and it wasn't a lot of money, but it was $600+. And I stood up and I said, hey, maybe we can divide this up and everybody can get something back unless there's something else we want to do with it. during a break, someone, a classmate came up and said, you know, Officer Andrew Garten was just murdered in the line of duty in Southern California. And I opt that we take it to the table that all of our funds be given to that officer's family. So that happened. I brought it up right before lunchtime. Every hand went up. There was no question about that. That's where our funds were going to go. But then there were some logistical problems with getting the funds to that officer's family. Even though we had Southern California officers in that class, sergeants, it was very difficult to find where to donate to and how to get the money to the family. The department can close up sometimes, and that information isn't made to the general public. So I ran into that setback, but eventually we delivered the money with a letter, and that function was performed. When Jim brought Fallen to me and said, this is what I'm thinking, what do you think? And I said, you know what? I just did something similar on such a small level, and I was just drawn to that cause, and I said, I'm all for it. And we started strategizing and putting this all together, and it was a venue to where we could really reach out and touch everybody in the entire nation and build this until we could cover every single officer that is killed in the line of duty in our nation every year. And I think a lot of people don't understand that when an officer is killed in the line of duty, generally their check stops. That's their last day of work. They're not paid again. That means the family is not paid. And even if you have a spouse that's working, and most of the time that's, I would say that's not the case, your income is about 50% or more. And that is and you have to deal with the tragedy that occurred. But now you have to deal with everyday survival. And that's something that being, you know, a former retired officer, I understand very well. Always worried about with my family. Talked about it with all my colleagues. And so we came up with a way that anybody in the entire world can go to our website and they can donate to an officer. They can go to First Giving. If there's a brother who's living in China and he doesn't know how to donate, or another family member or a friend, and they don't know how to get to this person and get the funds there when they need it, this is the way to do it. And that's how I was brought into co-founding Fallen.
Well, it's it's a beautiful story about people pulling together and you know, thinking of others and giving back. So approximately 164 officers die per year here in the United States in the line of duty. So that distinguishes a bit from Marianne Cramp's brother, I think. I don't really know the circumstances there, but that is something I'm wanting to point out to our listeners. We're not talking about officers who may have, you know, died of old age or something like that. We're really talking about officers who are taken in their prime and before their time. Isn't that true?
Yes, that's true. And, you know, Marianne's brother was on duty when that happened. Many corrections officers and regular officers perform many, many duties, and they are asked to do regular functions like climb ladders to get from one place to another, jump fences, do all kinds of things that you wouldn't even think of could be in danger. But I have some stats for you. And
I want to hear those stats too, but I just want to say thank you for that clarification. It absolutely didn't mean any disrespect to Marianne's brother. And thank you for that clarification. So, yes, please, tell us the stats.
And this is actually a low number because there are probably some that we don't know about, but there's been a total of at least 63 deaths in the line of duty. And to break it down very quickly, automobile accidents, 18, duty-related illness, 2, falls, 2, gunfire, 22, heart attack, 2, motorcycle accident, 3, stab, 3, struck by vehicle, 2, vehicle pursuit, 2, vehicular assault, 7, and by gender, 54 males, 9 females, average age 41, and here is something that is particularly telling. Average tour of duty, which means their average length of their career and their job up to that date, 12 years and 8 months. So that means in a 25-year career, a 25-year veteran, just as much as a first-year veteran, could be in jeopardy and could be killed in the line of duty. So it doesn't matter your experience or how long you've been on the department. 12 years and 8 months is the average that an officer is killed in the line of duty. Average age.
Wow. I actually had heard, Jim Remick, also, if you want to weigh in on this, right now we're talking to Jim Remick and Aaron Pedro de la Sol. What 26th climate is in the country right now? I had heard, and I don't know how true this is, but I had heard that violence towards police officers was actually on the rise.
Well, what you're probably saying is that with the economy being as tough as it is, that the regular folks out there, I think a lot of people that wouldn't normally turn to crime are having to venture into those areas, and I think that is resulting in the upswing in problems with interact with police officers in a negative way. And also with the poor economy, you have a lot of the states are, and California being one of them, because they're letting a lot of people out of jail, and I think that also attributes to the amount of violent crime against police officers occurring too. So yes, definitely the statistics are saying that the violent crime against police officers is going up.
So as I understand it, it's financially, there are fewer police officers trying to cover a given beat because there's been cutbacks in the departments. And then you're actually saying the criminal element has increased due to poor economy. Am I hearing you correctly?
Yeah, that is correct.
Yeah. Has that created any kind of a climate of fear for the officers who are on duty, or is that just all in the line of duty?
My experience with law enforcement officers is they're really not afraid. In fact, the opposite generally occurs, and the biggest problem with most of us is that they get complacent about things. They start to take for granted that car stop or knocking on that door because they've done it so many times without anything happening, and all of a sudden their guard's down at the wrong moment, and that's when bad things happen. So I will say that Aaron was an instructor teaching things like that to officers for quite a while, and I think that the biggest thing that he tried to convey to them on the educational side, not the physical side, was to, hey, take every car stop, every door knock, every situation you go to as a police officer as if your life depended upon it. And I'll let Aaron talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Retired Sergeant De La Sol, Aaron, also Vice President of Fallen. I'd love to hear what you have to say about that.
Well, I agree with Jim about complacency. I think it's one of the officers' greatest adversaries, because the frequency of these high-profile events is low, and so therefore you tend to have perishable skills as far as keeping safety, paying attention, those type of things. Yet the frequency of mundane activities or doing this what appears to be the same thing over and over is high, and when you do a high number of something and you are successful, it doesn't mean you're successful because you're smarter than the rest or you're better always. It just means you're successful because nothing happened. It's a false sense of security, and so therefore complacency sets in and you let your, you know, your guard down. Because you may have been in the house 10 times prior to that one time you go to the house, and everyone has been compliant or everybody has been, you know, supportive. But this one time you go to the house, something has changed, and you have no idea what that is until you get there. And are you ready on that 11th time, or are you going off of your 10 contacts before that? And that's the real, that's a real question that every officer has to ask themselves. Am I allowing, you know, everyday activities, things on my mind, financial things, maybe my family, who knows what, relationships, get in the way of what I need to do every day at work? And can anyone truly be 100% focused over a 12.5-hour shift or an 8-hour shift or a 10-hour shift? There's so many different hours. Can they really be that focused the entire time and on high alert for 12.5 hours? And the answer, unfortunately, is no. It would drain us till there was nothing left. So, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, really. It's, you really got to stay on your toes. Retired Deputy Sheriff Sergeant Jim Remick, I wanted to ask you a little bit about what happens to the surviving spouse. I understand sometimes they're maybe not treated in the best way by the city or county that their officer spouse worked for. Can you give us some examples of that?
Well, you know, I definitely would say that is not the case. I think each agency takes care of their officers that are put through, or the officers' families that are put through this in the best way that they possibly can put them. The problem is that, you know, being that police agencies are the government, and there's rules against gifts of public funds, and the taxpayers demand this, and it does seem cruel in the very beginning, but it's, and I think most of the widows and family members that go through this probably get upset in the beginning, but ultimately understand that when that clock is punched at the end of the day, may it be that, you know, I'm going home for to see my family, or the horrific tragedy of being killed. If the police officer is not working and if doesn't go to work the next day, that paycheck stops. And so I don't think it's, in fact, I won't even say I don't think. I know that the agencies would change this if they possibly could, but there's really no way to do it. That's why organizations like Fallen and some of the other really great organizations out there across the country need to step up and fill that void immediately, because the families do get cut off, and they're not only dealing with all the grief and all that stuff, and as you well know, financial issues only compound those issues. So, I'm glad you asked that, because I cannot even think of an agency that is not so emotionally intertwined with the family going through this that they would give them everything. Everything that they own to stop this pain. So it's just the nature of a bureaucracy that they have to, the paycheck stops, the computer stops.
Yeah.
It's not a human.
Right, so the bureaucracy perhaps gets, has things that, you know, it has to do, but the people involved, I'm sure, care a great deal. Actually, Susan, are you still with us, Susan Moody?
I am.
Yeah, would you like to weigh in on that topic and tell the listeners a little bit about how you felt you were treated by the, I guess your husband worked for the city of Richmond. Did you think they treated you well? And then even if they did, if they had great hearts, there was just so much they could do. Where did it fall short for you?
You know, the city of Richmond and the police department did step up and take care of the girls and I, you know, to their best. You know, yes, our paycheck that we received, you know, monthly from Brad working there was definitely cut off immediately. He was killed on the 4th, and on the 16th when we would usually get paid. That didn't come in. To be honest with you, I didn't even think about it. I didn't think about having to pay my bills. I didn't think about really financial anything in the first couple, whatever it was, weeks, maybe even months. But I can say that, my brother was actually stepping in and helping me out with all the financial stuff. And I was very fortunate to receive a text from an organization called the 100 Club. And they're out of Contra Costa County. They're all over the place, but they're located in Contra Costa County as well. And they came to my door probably 2 days after Brad was killed and gave me a check and basically said, this is yours to keep. No questions asked, no payment in return, just for you to use for whatever way you need to use it. And looking back on it now, that money paid my mortgage for the time that I didn't get paid for Brad's pension. And thinking about it now, I don't know what I would have done without that. And so for an organization to become of what it is that Fallen is going to become, I would stand behind it 100% because being in the position that I am, that I was in as a widow, it's tough. And you don't want that financial burden, and you really just have so much other sadness and other things that you really need to focus on and not focus on, you know, how you're going to feed your kids or how you're going to, you know, continue your mortgage payment or whatever it may be. It's nice to have that reassurance that you really don't have to worry about the financial aspect of it all. So,
yeah, absolutely. And Jim and Aaron, I would imagine that the statistic that you quoted, Aaron, was that the average officer who is killed in the line of duty is 41 years of age, so we're talking about more than likely people who have children at home and therefore that increased responsibility. Would you agree with that?
I absolutely would, and maybe not 30 years ago, but nowadays with so many people waiting for their careers to take flight before they have kids, and they're having kids in their 30s and everything, they're becoming younger and younger at that age.
Yes, it's true. It's true. A lot of people aren't starting their families until they hit their 40s, or at least their late 30s. So, looking at the time, I'm noticing that we're about out of time, and I know, Aaron, that you wanted to talk about a couple of events that are coming up. Could you tell us about those?
Sure. We partnered with UC Davis in Davis, and they have a Salute to Heroes football game on August the 30th. You can go to their website and find the time and buy tickets. And what I mean by partner is they have decided to make us the focus. So we'll have about a five-minute pregame presentation. We'll have a booth set up there. You can come and drop off a donation at the booth. And we'll be showing our respect to fallen officers this year at that place. That's one thing that we're doing. And in the future, at Vinter's Cellars in the Sacramento area, and this will be going on our website as well, we're going to have a fundraising event at this winery, and it's going to be an art and wine fundraiser specifically for Fallen. The winery is going to partner with us, and they've done these type of events before. So this will be our first annual fundraiser at this particular venue, and we're really excited about that. It's going to be in October, and again, we'll get you the dates. We'll give you the dates on the webpage and everything later. But those are two things to look forward to in the near future.
Yeah, absolutely. So you're going to have a special event at UC Davis and then another one again at Vinter's in Sacramento area?
Yes, Vinter's Cellar Custom Winery, and that's going to be happening in October. More to follow.
Beautiful, beautiful. And again, the website is rfallen.org. And then if you want to sign up for donating to the specific officers, you can go to firstgiving.com/fallen. Is there anything else, Aaron, that you'd like to say in closing to our listeners about how they might be able to reach Fallen or...
Sure. I can make it quick. If you don't use some of the tools that we've set up here, you can always send a check or a money order or whatever form to the actual P.O. Box, and I'll give that to you. It's P.O. Box 2103, Citrus Heights, California, 95611. And in addition to that, we are on eBay. We've partnered with eBay, and we've been approved for a nonprofit through eBay Giving Works. So if you're an eBay member and you love eBay, go to eBay Giving Works, look up Fallen, and you can actually donate through eBay using your PayPal, and you can also list items for sale through eBay from that site, eBay Giving Works, or Fallen, and you can designate the percentage of your sale that you want to go to Fallen, and then you can keep the rest, or, as we would appreciate, you just donate 100%. But you can put whatever you want on there for sale through your eBay account, and you can donate to us that way.
Well, you guys have only been here for how long? A year? 2 years?
Less than that. This year, and really operating for 4 months.
4 months. See, I think you're moving along really fast. It's fabulous. Jim Remick, CEO of Fallen. Any last notes you'd like to make to our listeners before we close the show?
Well, I think about people that pay the ultimate sacrifice an awful lot. You know, may it be from the soldiers that are overseas to the police officers that are doing the same thing, making it so we can all sleep at night. And I thought of this long ago. The biggest insult to our society as Americans is when one of our officers are killed in the line of duty. It is the greatest insult to all of our freedom and all of our safety. And everybody should pay attention to that. And when families like Susan have to be put through this, and families like Marianne Cramp's brother, William Wright, and the many others. I mean, there's so many names. And, some are taken care of extremely well, and then others fall through the cracks. And we're trying to make sure nobody falls through the cracks. I think that's the main objective of Fallen, is that we're going
Absolutely.
To make sure whether something bad happens in Mississippi or California or Hawaii or wherever it happens to be, that everyone gets what they need. And that's our objective.
Well, I know oftentimes the police is something like electricity. We take it for granted. We just expect it to be there when we need it. So I want to thank you guys so much for making sure that no one does fall through the cracks. And I want to thank our listeners for tuning in. I want to thank Susan Moody for sharing her story. And thank you for being so brave. I also want to thank Marianne Cramp for calling us all the way from North Carolina at this late hour. And Marianne, we certainly wish you and your family the very best. And you have our condolences for your brother, William Wright's recent passing, which just occurred in April of this year. And Aaron Pedro de la Sol, the co-founder and vice president of Fallen, and Jim Remick, the CEO and founder of Fallen, thank you all for joining us in this shame-free zone. You've all been a real blessing to us. And that's it from the shame-free zone. Thanks for tuning in. Good night.
Thank you for tuning in tonight. If you liked what you heard and you want more solutions for your love life, please call me toll-free at 888-903-0050. Once again, that number is 888-903-0050. I am the only person who answers that line, and I am usually available Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. You can also visit sexwithoutshame.com to discover more of what I can do for you. And remember, your secret is safe with you. Sering kesepian, kenapa tak mutus kabar berita?